Hi, this is Diane DiRigo with Nuclear Information and Resource Service. We're gathered tonight to talk about a very important recurring and renewed threat of nuclear waste, mainly nuclear power waste, being released from nuclear regulatory control to get into regular garbage landfills, into hazardous sites, into other destinations that are not regulated for nuclear materials. We have three speakers who will speak for about anywhere from 6 to 10 or 12 minutes each about aspects of this Nuclear Regulatory Commission proposal to declare nuclear waste very low level, and we're saying that it is a very large lie, that this waste is long-lasting and it needs to be isolated. Organization here, Nuclear Information Resource Service, we have occasional telebriefings. So this is one of the first ones we've had in a few months, and we are encouraging people to take action tonight and to support our efforts, and we certainly support yours in better nuclear accountability. So the speakers tonight are Dan Hirsch, who is a former teacher at the University of California at Santa Cruz and the co-founder and head of the Adlai Stevenson Nuclear Program. He is the president of the Committee to Bridge the Gap, and he's done testimony before Congress, the state agencies, the state government, and is a world-renowned expert on nuclear waste, nuclear materials, nuclear safety. After Dan, we'll have Jane Williams. Jane is an economics major. I don't know if you consider yourself an economist, but she's certainly an activist and knowledgeable about hazardous waste and nuclear waste, and has been working with communities of color and communities targeted with these materials and with these materials for decades. Terry Lodge is an attorney in Ohio who has been part of successful campaigns to stop nuclear reactors and nuclear waste dumps. He's done a lot of public interest work on not just nuclear issues, but also civil rights, gender equality, workers' rights, and peace and nuclear weapons and power issues, and has also been involved in other energy issues like fracking. So the goal tonight is to share information on what is going on with nuclear waste from nuclear reactors and this proposal by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to consider nuclear waste VLLW, very low level, even though it's very long-lasting, and stop regulating it. So Dan will give us an overview of that. Jane will share with us how this is impacting communities that are already struggling with landfills. And then Terry is going to give us some of the legal perspectives and how the many ways that this whole idea is illegal. So Dan, I'm going to start off. Dan Hirsch, Committee to Bridge the Gap.
Thanks very much. In the midst of this extraordinary pandemic threatening so much of this country and the world, the NRC has quietly proposed the most massive deregulation of radioactive waste in the country's history. This deregulation would result in virtually all radioactive waste from nuclear power plants, except for the irradiated fuel, being deregulated and allowed to be dumped in unlicensed landfills not designed or licensed for radioactive waste. They could go into municipal landfills, the local garbage dump in your community, which was designed for rotting cabbages and thrown away milk cartons, not designed for plutonium, strontium 90, cesium 137, or the scores of other radionuclides. So let me try to explain a little bit what they're doing and what the impacts could be. And if you'll pardon a moment of sarcasm, I've often felt that one of the first employees of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in the mid-1970s, when it was first established, was a man named Eric Blair. Some of you may know him by his pen name, which is George Orwell. The NRC has used Orwellian distortion of language since its inception. So what we're talking about here is what they, the NRC, call low-level radioactive waste. But their legal definition of low-level radioactive waste has nothing to do with the level. It's a function of where it came from. So when you have plutonium or strontium or cesium inside irradiated nuclear fuel, it's called high-level waste. When it leaks out and is collected in filters, evaporator bottoms, and coats the insides of piping and reactor vessels, it's called low-level. Even though it's exactly the same radionuclides, exactly the same toxicity, exactly the same longevity. Some so-called low-level waste is higher in concentration than some so-called high-level waste. So it's not a function of how dangerous it is or how concentrated it is. It's a function of where it came from. What the NRC is now proposing is to create a new category, which they euphemistically, and I think George Orwell would be actually proud of them, they're calling very low-level waste. And they admit that there's no statutory definition and no regulatory definition of this very low-level waste. But they are proposing to deregulate it and allow it to be dumped in any of hundreds of municipal landfills around the country. And indeed, under their proposal, it could be dumped in a vacant lot near a school. They are proposing to lift the requirement that you have a license to receive radioactive waste for disposal and that you have to meet various safety requirements. Those requirements exist in Title 10 of the Code of Federal Regulations, Part 61. They're not terrific. These facilities have all had troubles, the license sites. But it's vastly better to dispose of this material in sites that are licensed for it and have to meet those design criteria than to be dumped in sites that are not designed and have no regulation for radioactive materials. So you hear the term very low level, and you think that must mean it's very low level. But when one looks a little further into the NRC's proposal, it would cover, according to the National Academy of Sciences, roughly 80% of the volume of decommissioning waste from nuclear power plants. When a reactor is finished with its operation, you have steam generators and reactor vessels and concrete containment domes that have to be removed. And those today have to go to a licensed site. Under this proposal, they could instead be torn down and taken a few miles down the road to the local garbage dump. 80% of the volume, the National Academy estimates and industry estimates, of decommissioning waste would be covered by this rule and deregulated. But in fact, essentially 100% would be, because the NRC's only numerical definition of very low-level waste in their proposal is the amount of waste that the landfill operator estimates would produce a dose of 25 millirem a year. Now, this, first of all, is just a paper estimate. They run a computer model. They change the inputs over and over again to get the result they want. But even if it were true, 25 millirem is the equivalent of 900 unneeded chest x-rays over a lifetime with a cancer risk of approximately 1 in 500, according to the National Academy of Sciences and EPA's own official risk estimates. So that is 200, let's see if I can do this right, 200 times, I won't give it to you exactly, but it is hundreds of times the EPA cleanup goal and far outside the upper level of what EPA ever allows for the risk range. But it's worse than that. The current licensed sites have to meet a 25 millirem a year standard. So if you believe the NRC, the very low-level waste would be allowed to produce as much dose to the public in an unlicensed site as is allowed from all Illovo waste going into a licensed site. And one little other factoid, they're changing the definition of a milliram to something called effective dose equivalent, so that in fact the very low level waste that they are proposing would be allowed to produce 2.5 times higher dose to the public than the already unacceptable dose you can get from a licensed site. So the bottom line is they're proposing to deregulate virtually all radioactive waste from nuclear power plants except for the irradiated fuel. It would also deregulate all sorts of other radioactive waste from entities other than nuclear power plants. And the consequences of this could be immense. It's all done in secret. There's no opportunity for a licensing hearing, virtually no environmental review. They're doing no environmental review of the proposal. They're calling it an interpretive rule because they're trying to change the existing regulation, rescind those regulations without rescinding the regulations. And so they're violating the Administrative Procedure Act, National Environmental Policy Act, and the Atomic Energy Act to do all this. And they're very frank about it. They say that the motive is to produce large savings for the nuclear industry in the cost of decommissioning the reactors. But the way they're doing that is by transferring the cost from the nuclear industry to the public that will end up with increased cancers, leukemias, and genetic defects because of the exposures. So the bottom line is that it's not very low level. It's not even low level. It is all radioactive waste or virtually all radioactive waste from a nuclear power plant besides the irradiated fuel. It can produce immense doses even if their calculations were correct, doses that you would not accept. You don't get one chest x-ray that you don't need that doesn't have a medical benefit that you didn't give consent for. Under their proposal, you would be getting hundreds over your lifetime if they even met the standards they're setting. And it would all be done in secret. You would never know that your local landfill had requested this exemption. You would never have an environmental impact statement that you could comment on. You would never have an opportunity for a hearing. And this stuff would just be going there and going there and going there and leaking because the facility was never designed to handle radioactive materials in the first place. So it's an extraordinary proposal. It is one which is just amazingly callous. And to do it in the midst of this pandemic, is just a real indication of the level to which the NRC has sunk. It's supposed to be protecting the public. It's protecting instead the industry. It's supposed to be regulating. Instead, it's deregulating. And it's not even following the law as to how to propose a change to regulation. So I'm going to stop now, and I'll be available later if there are some questions.
Thank you, Dan. And Jane Williams, California Communities Against Toxics.
Thank you, Diane. So it is an extraordinary proposal by the NRC during a very extraordinary time. It clearly is a wholesale deregulation of nuclear waste across the entire spectrum of what kind of waste is being produced, not only from the nuclear industry and decommissioning waste, but all other kinds of nuclear materials as well, both industrial and medical uses. The Atomic Energy Act was passed in the mid-50s, and it was 20 years later in the mid-70s when the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act was passed. When Congress passed the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, it actually specifically prohibited the disposal of these kinds of nuclear materials in both what's called Subtitle D and Subtitle C landfills through how it defined what waste is. So it's rather stunningly remarkable to me that the NRC is going to basically flaunt what Congress did in RCRA, and RCRA has not been amended by Congress since that time, and basically say we're going to jump over what you restricted and we're going to start basically putting nuclear waste in all different kinds of landfills. And I want to point out that it's not just garbage landfills and hazardous waste landfills. The regulation that's proposed would allow for the land burial. So it could be any kind of land burial. It could go into a, you know, a mining operation. It could anything where nuclear waste would be sequestered in the ground would seem to be applicable from the reading of the proposed regulation. Not only does it talk about land burial, but once you deregulate nuclear waste, you can also find nuclear waste going into a wide variety of different scenarios where the public can be exposed to it. For instance, scrap yards and junkyards. It's kind of like a freeway where nuclear waste is on the freeway, and when you create the off-ramps, it can just get off wherever it wants. And so you can be headed to some kind of a landfill, but you can also be headed into a reuse scenario where there's some famous examples where radioactive materials were made into tables in Mexico and hammers in Peru. And so we would sort of be turning the clock back and allowing those reuse scenarios to occur as well. I also want to point out that today, the Trump administration also further deregulated environmental analysis on major government rules and projects through a proposal to essentially kneecap NEPA, which is another law that was passed in the mid-70s, the National Environmental Policy Act. And so it is very clear to those of us who have worked to enforce these laws over the last numerous decades that this administration is just cold cloth wholesale trying to deregulate and gut as many of these environmental protection laws as possible. And this action by the NRC, I would say, is stunning in its breadth and depth and its boldness, and extremely dangerous for frontline communities that under the proposed rule or the proposed interpretive rulemaking the NRC would be doing would never even get notification that all of a sudden nuclear materials could be recycled in their local scrapyard, could be coming to their local landfill, or could be sequestered in a sand pit in their community without any kind of public knowledge or notification. So thank you for inviting me today to speak, and I'm happy to answer questions at the end of this telebriefing.
Thank you, Jane. And Terry Lodge with the Toledo Safe Energy Coalition and many other affiliations are one of our legal experts on this atrocious rule. Proposal, Terry?
Yes, thank you. There are several points I want to make. One of them is to follow upon what Dan was saying about the secrecy, or at least the non-publicity, of the granting of these exemptions. I call this a permitting process of non-permits, because in effect, there's this very shallow kind of registration, if you will, of a landfill operator proposing to accept radioactive waste. The exemption, which is actually a permit by another name, is granted, and that's it. There will be no provisions for worker safety. There will be no provisions for instance, keeping GPS coordinates of the locations in landfill cells where the junk is buried. There will be no reporting requirements whatsoever imposed upon the landfill operators. In other words, if you inadvertently find out that your local city dump is now a radioactive waste dump, you won't be able to find out what truth or lies were submitted to get the NRC exemption, because those will be classified as business secrets. And there won't be any ongoing, at least no mandatory, ongoing business records. There won't be records, for instance, of the origin of the radioactive waste, what nuclear power plants it comes from. That's an interesting way of avoiding liability. down through the generations. The legal weaknesses in this are rather clear and manifest. One of them is that
Terry, you're breaking up a little bit.
I'm trying. Thank you. I'm doing. Is this better?
Yep.
I'm turning my head toward the tower. How's that? The legal ramifications are, one, as Dan said, this is, by calling it an interpretive regulation, the NRC is actually making a 180-degree change of direction. They are reinterpreting regs that have been on their books for decades. And they're saying, well, now it means this. And you don't, legally speaking, get to do that. You must provide explanation and serious justification as to why the old interpretation no longer fits. It would be a little bit different if it was sort of a modification based upon new science or something like that, but this isn't that. This isn't science-based or anything. It's just we've been thinking about this, and we think now it's time for a change. There's also violation or violations of the Atomic Energy Act, which is a very difficult, lengthy, hard to understand statute. It's hundreds of pages long, covers, of course, many topics. But the Atomic Energy Act does not contemplate this abuse of the concept of exemption. And this is a permit, and it's a license. But it's not being called a license, and it won't be treated as a license because of, as I indicated, the report, lack of reporting requirements and all that. The third rather straightforward problem, which Dan also mentioned, is that if this were being treated properly as a rule change, under the Administrative Procedure Act, it would be required to be subjected to public comment. Now, it is being subjected to public comment, but the agency has no legal obligation to do anything. They don't even have an obligation to respond on the record to the comments that you and we submit. They have no obligation to the public whatsoever.
Terry, can't hear you. Or is that me?
Decided to adopt this interpretation, and then the game will be on. But there is no environmental review because for a mere interpretive change, they don't have to, because interpretive changes are supposedly required to be so minor that there's not going to be overt environmental effects. And as you can tell, there are. Now, we have no idea how many of the nation's 2,600 landfill sites are going to be lured entrepreneurially into trying to cash in on some of the profit from the decommissioning era of the nuclear industry. There may only be a few. There may only be a few dozen, maybe a couple of hundred, but then again, there may be many more than that. And in any event, you don't want it to be a landfill in your town. You don't want it to be a landfill in your starving rural community that needs an infusion of money. You don't want it happening, period. I would finally just point out that and very cogently made the case that this isn't just going to be landfills that are potential new entrepreneurs in the game, but you need to understand that current state-of-the-art sanitary landfills are not engineered for the extremely dense, heavy radioactive waste. They aren't engineered for construction debris. They aren't engineered for very heavy metallic rubble or parts. And 10 to 15% of conventional begin to leak within the first decade of their existences. They are typically licensed to operate for about 60 years. They're supposedly licensed based upon the predictions that they will remain stable and contained for perhaps another 60 years. But by the time of that 60-year closing, more than 60% of your typical municipal state-of-the-art built in 2019-2020 landfills will be leaking. And you don't want them to be leaking stuff that's going to have to be contained for thousands, tens of thousands, or even hundreds of thousands of years. Thank you.
Thanks. So I'll just throw in a little, a couple more concerns. One, which I'm not sure that the general public realizes, is that the entire nuclear power reactor is radioactive waste by the time it closes. So huge volumes, and it's radioactive with, as one of the previous speakers pointed out, long-lasting elements like plutonium and then strontium and cesium, biologically active. And so we're talking about concrete and metal and equipment and piping and soil and asphalt and the whole reactor itself. And the idea for the industry as they deregulate is to not require it to go to the licensed dumps, which cost sometimes 10 or 100 times as much, maybe even 1,000 times as much to dispose of it. And really the cost of managing the waste that's generated from the nuclear power industry needs to be borne by that industry. Otherwise, it's just another big subsidy to nuclear power that we all share. So the fact that the whole reactor itself is waste and all of the components and all of that, and up until this proposal came along, it has been required that anything that's got the man-made radioactivity from those reactors needs to go to a licensed radioactive facility, disposal site, processor, whatever, but it needs to go somewhere with a license. And the whole idea here is to give exemptions to any number of facilities. Landfills are preferred, but it could be anybody, any person, and then they would be able to take radioactive waste that they describe that they're going to isolate to 25 millirems a year. So to talk about that, and then I guess what I would do now is to open up to, let me first ask each of the speakers if you wanted to ask anything of each other. And if not, then we'll go to the participants that have called in.
Okay, so if you would like to ask, so if you would like to ask a question, just hit *6 on your phone, and you'll go into the queue, and we'll take questions in the order that they're received. And once again, that's pressing *6 on your dial pad, and that'll put you in the queue, and we'll unmute you in the order the questions come in, and you can ask your question, and we'll have the panelists respond.
Does anybody have questions? *6.
So Dia, there were a couple that came in on email that that maybe I could share as we're waiting for the queue to fill up.
Okay.
So one is, Dan, could you talk about the possibility for for this regulation to allow for the import of waste from radioactive waste from other countries, and is that a possibility?
Wait, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. I had you on mute. Yeah, it's a big issue. When you deregulate the radioactive waste, when you allow a unlicensed landfill to take licensed radioactive material, first of all, you will allow that radioactive waste to be shipped in from anywhere. It can come from any other country. Second of all, you create a very large incentive for other countries to dump their radioactive waste here. As Diane was saying, the tipping fee, the cost to take your dump truck to a dump and tip it and dump the trash into the landfill is vastly lower for a regular garbage dump than it is for a licensed radioactive waste facility. So there would be a great incentive for us to become the recipient of much of the world's radioactive waste by this act of the NRC deregulating so much of the radioactive waste stream.
Tim, I'm getting texts from people who said that you have to do something so that they can test Star 6, that they can't...
Yeah, so, sorry about that. We need to move into Q&A mode.
Okay, apologies, folks.
Hey, Diane, may I make a comment?
Yes.
This is Terry.
Yes, sir.
Following upon Dan's comment, when he's talking about how it's vastly cheaper to dispose in a sanitary municipal-type landfill, we're talking perhaps 2% or 3% of the cost of disposing of it at WCS in Texas or the LLRW, the low-level radioactive waste dump in Clive, Utah. So we're talking about a savings of 96 or 97% of the cost. So there's an enormous economic incentive for the industry to be pushing very hard for this. I would also point out, kind of related to that, is that we're discovering, of course, as nuclear activists have been pointing out to the NRC for decades, that the decommissioning set-aside trust accounts that the NRC has required to be set up by the nuclear utilities going back 50, 60 years are not adequately funded, and the repeated economic shocks to the system, are not helping because the money that is being held in trust and invested is not growing at the projected rate. So there is a crisis of the ability to pay the estimated costs for decommissioning. Again, there's enormous pressure to simply deregulate the garbage and let it happen. That's a very, very significant point that people need to understand. And there will be entrepreneurs who will make money, you know, jacking up their prices at the landfills. Because if you have 96% of a margin to play with and you double or triple your tipping fees, that's a lot of money for you, and it isn't very much money for the nuclear industry. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. So we have a bunch of people in the queue. And do you want to select people, Dee, or do you want me to handle muting and unmuting?
I can. You make sure that the tweet people get in, and I can do Kate Bartholomew is first in the queue. Is that what you're seeing, Tim?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So Kate is from New York Sierra Club. Do you want to go ahead, Kate?
Wow, I didn't know you'd know that it was me. That's cool. Okay. Well, is this also partly due to the fact that, you know, we still don't have anywhere to put the fuel? I mean, we don't have any place to put the fuel. So that's a conundrum. And now... is this also going to be a situation where someone can suddenly declare themselves a waste operator and, you know, turn their backfield into a dig it up and turn it into a garbage disposal site and apply for a permit or whatever and sequester however many tons of very low level, euphemistically, nuclear waste. How awful, and what can we do? I mean, aside from getting everyone under the sun to make comments, what else can we do?
Well, I'll let Dan answer the technical question that you just asked, and then I would say that we need to make sure that our Congress members know that we don't want this, and senators.
Okay.
And we'll talk about that also.
Yeah, Dan here. this is not directly connected to the problem of the irradiated fuel and other high-level waste, which is a very large and real problem, not of our creation. Most of us have opposed the high-level waste being created from day one, but it does exist. No more of it should be created, but there is present not only no place for it to go, but no plan as to how to come up with a place for it to go. Your second question had to do with, can anybody who has a vacant field apply to take this material? And yes, the answer is yes. Under the NRC proposal, all that person has to do is send in a brief request to be exempted from the requirements of the regulations, and a brief estimate that if you took waste, the dose would be less than 25 millirem a year. As I said, about 900 chest x-rays over a lifetime. And if you simply, as a landfill operator or a vacant field owner, tell people, tell the NRC, look, no one lives within a half mile, no one will be allowed to live on top of it, there will be no dose over 25 millirem, NRC will rubber stamp that, and you could take not just tons, but you could take vast quantities in that unlicensed site. And one quick answer in terms of what can be done about it, get your comments in as individuals and as groups by the deadline. We'll try to get an extension, but don't count on it. So get that in by Monday, first thing. If there's vast numbers of comments and they raise good issues, it will help with the real way in which we challenge this, which is by having to go to court, or if the Democrats win the Senate and the hold on to the House and there's a Democrat in the White House, through the Congressional Review Act, which allows the Congress to review actions by the agencies and overturn them, or potentially by being able to get the NRC commissioners under a different administration to not approve it. It's not a done deal. NRC has been extremely sloppy in the way they've tried to pull this off, and they're very vulnerable. But we have to fight it, or they will succeed in having done this under the cover of the pandemic.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Jane. I would underscore the importance of anybody in New York contacting Senator Schumer and raising concerns directly with his district staff or D.C. staff.
Because he's the minority leader in the Senate. And he has power. Okay, so we have the next caller is Esther Jameson. Esther, are you there?
Hi. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just wondering whether this is on the radar of any of the state attorney generals.
I don't know. I tried to get in touch with some of them, and it's complicated. I don't know if the speakers know of whether any attorneys general have are looking at this.
This is Jane, not to my knowledge. But the National Association of Attorney Generals have taken an active interest in nuclear waste issues historically. But I haven't seen any indication that they're wading into this particular proposal right now.
In 1992, the National Association of Attorneys General had a position against a version of this, which was called below regulatory concern. This is even worse than that. So perhaps that's a good idea of where to go. And I don't know what state you're in, but would you know you could contact your attorney general. That would be terrific.
Yeah, I think I'll do that. Thanks.
What state are you in? Okay. All right. The next person. I see here there was someone there who's not there anymore, a Naomi.
Well, I'm here. Is it me?
Okay. I don't know.
So my name is Mary Perner, president of Tri-Valley CARES, which is Tri-Valley Communities Against a Radioactive Environment. We're in Livermore, California, but we're a pretty large international group. And so here in Livermore, we have two Superfund cleanup sites. the main site at Livermore Lab where they design nuclear weapons, and then a smaller site at Site up above the city of Tracy in California where they test them. And I have a couple questions, and one of them is there is an ongoing cleanup effort at both of these sites, and would this change in regulation affect the cleanup effort, which is conducted by EPA? It's expected to take, 80 years or something. So that's my initial question. Then I had a thought about, I wonder what ANA, Alliance for Nuclear Accountability, would do with this issue. Thirdly, will you be taping this? We're having a board retreat this coming weekend, Saturday, and I'd like to share it with the other board members from around the country. So let's start with the first question.
Well, I'm going to answer your third one. Is yes, it is being recorded, and it should be available by the weekend.
Thank you.
So the first question, what was it?
Whether Superfund cleanups would be affected.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
The question you had asked, the first question was whether Superfund cleanups could be affected. And the answer is yes. There's already been substantial efforts at a number of Superfund sites to save money by sending the radioactive waste from the cleanup to unlicensed disposal sites. In the Bay Area, where you are not far from, the Hunters Point Naval Shipyard, where radioactive ships were brought back from the Pacific nuclear weapons test and decontaminated in a largely African-American low-income community, contaminating it. It was revealed that radioactive waste from that cleanup had been shipped to municipal landfills, Contra Costa County, and elsewhere. The Santa Susana Field Laboratory in Southern California, a meltdown site that I've wasted 40 years of my life trying to get cleaned up, they sent radioactive waste to Kettleman Hills and to Buttonwillow, to hazardous waste facilities not licensed for radioactive materials, and to municipal landfills in the L.A. area. And this is already without the NRC going forward and deregulating. This was, frankly, illegal activity that we were able to stop from continuing. So it
What about sites that are under the auspices of the Department of Energy?
DOE generally disposes of its waste at DOE facilities. It will generally ship the waste from Livermore to the Nevada test site. But some DOE wastes are disposed of in commercial facilities, and if it becomes much cheaper by the stuff getting deregulated, it will certainly impact them. It isn't direct because the DOE radioactive materials are not licensed by the NRC, but it could have a substantial indirect effect by having DOE open its floodgates as well.
Thank you.
And then I see Kevin's on the queue coming up. He could probably talk to the ANA question that you had when it's his turn. At this point, we have Kay Combo. Let me unmute you. Okay. Kay?
Hi. I had a couple comments and I have a quick question. But I wanted to let everybody know that my township board did pass a pretty strong resolution opposing this. And Diane has that resolution if anybody would like it. And also that at Citizens for Alternatives to Chemical Contamination, on our front page they have an alert and it has the email address to send comments in. And I don't know if you have the email address posted on NIRSA's website or not, but I just
By tomorrow at 9, our website will be updated a little after 9 a.m.
Okay. Then also that United Steel Workers has an excellent letter opposing this as well. But my question is, Do you want people to contact then U.S. legislators that are friendly U.S. legislators that would to request a longer comment period? And if so, how much longer?
So the extensions that we've been asking for on all rulemakings and interventions is 6 months after the COVID crisis is over. Because people are having a really hard time during this COVID time of dealing with it. So that's what we've been asking for. It's 6 months after the COVID. Kevin?
Hello. Yeah, just to respond to the ANA question, I guess Beyond Nuclear is a member group. I'm on the listserv. So what I'll do is email the network, especially the board executive committee, and try to get them primed to do something by the public comment deadline. And I've been, you know, listening, taking notes, so I'll try to do that. If there's any sample comments that are together, that would be helpful too. Hopefully they can turn it around in the 5 days. My question I was going to ask is, what about the licensed dumps like Waste Control Specialists and Energy Solutions? Why are they not lobbying against this? If they make their money on charging a higher rate, and they're going to get outcompeted, is it that the decommissioning powers that be in the country, like Holtec, but that also includes Energy Solutions itself at this point, and now Northstar with Waste Control Specialists, are they going to make money on volume charging a lesser rate themselves? I know that Energy Solutions has set up like a VLLW, or tried to set up a VLLW dump site in Utah at its square mile in the desert. So I'm just curious why they're not putting a stop to it if they're going to lose money. Or is there just so much decommissioning waste?
Any other speakers? Yeah. Do any of the speakers want to take
I can quickly, and then Diane jump in. It's really remarkable about the how do I describe this? The interesting convergence of interests. So Energy Solutions, which runs this facility for Class A waste in Utah, you would think would be screaming about this because they are the main place where you send decommissioning waste. But in fact, they also are in a partnership to decommission San Onofre. And as mentioned, they have put in an application to the Utah state government already before the NRC even approves this proposal. They want to build an unregulated disposal cell right next to the regulated one. And they estimate that roughly two-thirds of the decommissioning volume from Fort Collins and from San Onofre could be declared very low-level waste and dumped into this unlicensed site. So they would make money in both directions. They would save money in the decommissioning of San Onofre, and they would receive the waste at their own facility, but would have to spend a fraction of the amount of money they have to spend for the portion of the facility that is licensed. There are one or two licensed low-level facilities that would be hurt pretty hard by this, and one of them is fighting it. But by and large, the interests of companies like U.S. Ecology that failed to get a licensed low-level facility at Ward Valley, California, that Jane and I fought for many years, it operates a hazardous waste facility in Idaho that has desperately been trying to repurpose itself as a radioactive waste facility without a license for radioactive waste. So they could make a fortune if this went through. So there's a convergence of interests. One or two of the operators would lose money. Others would make money because they're in the business of decommissioning.
I was going to just let people know that there are four operating licensed nuclear dumps right now in the country. One is up in Washington State, and it takes waste from the Rocky Mountain and the Northwest Compact States, and South Carolina has operating facility at Barnwell, which only takes waste from South Carolina, Connecticut, and New Jersey. And then the Utah site, Energy Solutions, takes from the whole country, and it's supposed to only take up to a lesser concentration than the others, Class A. And then the Waste Control Specialist site in Andrews, Texas, that one takes from all around, well, it takes from about 34 states, and their Compact Commission allows the waste to come in. So that's the places where it's supposed to go legally, and then the rest of these options would all be new places for it to go. And Waste Control Specialist is opposed to it. Energy Solutions, I'm not sure what they're saying. And the other dump is run by U.S. Ecology, which likes the idea because they can take waste to their unlicensed facilities and make money that way. Kevin, were you done? I see you're still up here. Did you have something else on that?
Nope, that's it.
Okay. Robin Martinez? Oh, and then Tim will give us someone from email or tweet. But go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, hi, Robin Martinez. I'm with the National Lawyers Guild in Kansas City. I actually have two questions. One is a little bit more science engineering based. The second is more of a legal question. Let me start with the first one. And, you know, it's great to talk about 25 millirems. What does that really mean, though, in terms of actual volumes of waste?
Who wants to take that one?
In
Dan, James?
Rough terms, we're okay. Talking tens and tens of millions of cubic feet.
Did people hear that? Tens of millions of cubic feet. And your second question? Robin? Mm-hmm. Oh, did you get muted again? I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Let's see. How did that happen?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, Robin.
I think you put me on mute. Yeah, the second question really was of a legal nature, and I guess, you know, municipal landfills and landfills in general are often regulated by state environmental protection agencies. Would the federal preemption doctrine kind of override the ability of states to essentially regulate this? That's sort of one question. And then the second one of a legal, kind of a legal implications are, would this proposed regulation or the Atomic Energy Act or any of the other sort of legislative or regulatory provisions in place immunize landfill operators from any potential liability in the event of a leak or a discharge or contamination, let's say, to surrounding watersheds?
This is Terry. Robin, thank you, incidentally, for your initiative in the last couple of days contacting your local solid waste officials. The answer to your first question, your second question, is likely, yes, it would immunize the dumpers because of the fact that the NRC would expressly not be looking for anything that necessarily resembles landfill types. So if it's a free fire zone, then it's a free fire zone. And then working back to your first question.
What does that mean, Terry? I don't know what that means, a free fire zone.
It means, well, essentially, if there are no standards and no limitations, then all you fall back upon is state law of common law nuisance, that someone is operating a situation that's dangerous to the public health. The problem that I'm running into in Ohio with respect to a number of things, particularly agricultural operations like confined animal feeding operations, is that the state legislature has directly impaired the common law doctrine. And state governments can declare whether or not something may be sued over as a so-called tort action. So the problem is that depending on how powerful the waste disposal, the radioactive disposal industry or nuclear utilities are with a legislature, they may be able to grant a straight-ahead, out-and-out statutory type of immunity. But in all likelihood, even if that doesn't happen, you're going to have the usual problems of chasing down the landfill operators who will be protected by redundant layers of limited liability corporations, if they still exist at all. A lot of places will cut and run, where they will simply corporate-wise disappear. So liability as a practical matter is very difficult to fix, to establish, and it is an added defense that the NRC didn't impose any regulations. So what standard are you holding us to, Your Honor? So that's a problem. The first question you asked, Robin, is that preemption is a big deal. The NRC is openly litigating, very interestingly, with the Nuclear Energy Institute, which is the principal nuclear-related lobby in the country, over the issue of whether the, I don't know how many states there are, 28 or 34 states have state agencies that have contractual types of agreements with the NRC to regulate certain types of radioactive-related stuff in the states. And NEI has sued the NRC to try to establish that those state agencies have some independent regulatory authority in the very low-level waste forum or arena. The NRC is resisting on technical grounds, but the NRC has also insisted in some of its court filings that they have preemptive power and that it is their intention with this interpretive rule to make a uniform national standard, which is to say no standard at all.
That's interesting, Terry. Could you maybe share details on that particular case docket? I'm just wondering if it might be, you know, might be worth the effort of some of our nonprofit advocacy groups to perhaps file amicus briefs.
Yes, I'll be happy to. Indeed, thank you. I really appreciate your continuing interest.
If I could just jump in for a minute, the Energy Policy Act of 1992 added a new section to the Atomic Energy Act, Section 276. This is when the Congress overturned the last effort by the NRC to deregulate radioactive waste that was called below regulatory concern. So in addition to rescinding the NRC's BRC policies at the time, they also included these provisions into the Atomic Energy Act that allows state authority to regulate radioactive waste at levels that if the NRC ever tried to deregulate below those levels. So preemption arguably applies when NRC is regulating. Once they have deregulated something, they vacated the field. And it's not clear that the states cannot, in fact, then regulate. In fact, 16 states at the time of the below regulatory concern fight passed laws or regulations to regulate that which the NRC was deregulating. Secondly, very quickly, one of the ironic aspects of what they are doing is by having the NRC wash its hands of licensed radioactive material, the stuff will still be licensed, and letting it go to RCRA Part C and Part D landfills. RCRA can't regulate radioactive material, so you have material that is essentially without any regulator. The NRC has washed its hands of it, but the RCRA regulators can't touch it. So if a RCRA facility starts to leak, it's not clear who, if anybody, has the authority or the responsibility to fix it, because the NRC will have not be regulating the radioactive materials and the RCRA authorities can't.
Yeah, this
and
is Jane.
Jane,
did
you have something on that?
Yeah, yeah. I want to underscore that that's absolutely correct, and that is what's pretty scary. I remember telling one of our young RCRA attorneys when she first started working on Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, that when it comes to hazardous waste, you're either in RCRA or you're in your breakfast cereal. And a couple of years later, she came back and she said, I thought you were crazy, but you're absolutely correct. Because what happens with RCRA waste is that when you're either in the system and you're manifested from cradle to grave and you wind up in a regulated subtitle C landfill, of which there's only about a dozen in the country, or a hazardous waste incinerator. But once you exit the system, you can literally be in anything. And believe it or not, a lot of RCRA waste that is the RCRA equivalent of below regulatory concern ends up in fertilizer and is land applied as fertilizer. So it ends up in the food supply. A very similar situation here with what NRC is doing. Because RCRA specifically excludes many of these nuclear materials, they don't require manifesting. They are essentially out of the entire RCRA regulatory system. It's almost like you have a giant ship and you've just taken your nuclear, sort of a giant ship where you're trying to regulate all this waste and keep it out of the environment. And essentially what NRC is doing with this is like taking a bunch of lifeboats and putting their nuclear waste on it and just casting it out into the ocean. So once it's out of the NRC regulatory sphere, it doesn't automatically go into RCRA. In fact, it's prohibited from going into the RCRA sphere. And so it essentially it's out on the ocean. It's out in the open.
Tim has a question from either tweet or email that he wanted to read.
Yeah, and then we've been having just a little bit of trouble with the queue, and so we also wanted to go back to someone who previously got bumped off the queue accidentally, Michelle Lee, and then we'll resume the order of the queue. The question that came in from email is from Bill Kinsella. And he says, thank you for getting the word out about this troubling development. The violation of democratic process may be as troubling as the waste itself. In addition to Senator Schumer, would it make sense to contact the Senate and House members on the committees that oversee the NRC? Can you remind us which committees those are and who is on them?
Well, the committees are the House Energy Committee and the House, Natural Resources Committee have jurisdiction. The main committees with jurisdiction over the Nuclear Regulatory Commission are the energy committees in both the House and the Senate. And if you go to either house.gov or senate.gov, and then you go to the energy committee, you'll get the list of all of the committee members. And so that's for the committees of jurisdiction. And the other place to go when you're working on something like this would be the appropriations committees in the House and the Senate, but go specifically to the energy subcommittee. So it's House Energy, it's Senate Energy, it's House Appropriations Subcommittee on Energy, and the Senate Appropriations Energy Subcommittee. And EPW has authority in the Senate. That's the other committee. So yes, I would say we should contact our reps, all of our reps and all of our senators. It's too bad there's so many things to contact them over, but certainly if you've got one on these committees of jurisdiction, then definitely make sure they know about it. And yes. So, Michelle Lee.
No.
Okay, Michelle?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Michelle. Yeah.
Okay, great. Of course, there's a car alarm going off here. But anyway, so 2 points. One, focus on advocacy issues, and the second on technical. On the advocacy point, it really strikes me that there's a lot to mine here and a lot of opportunity for us to really make this a campaign, even though we have the deadline coming up very soon. That doesn't mean that we can't, you know, really push like crazy to make it make it a future campaign involving a lot of the people that are interested. I think more than virtually any other nuclear power issue, this has layman appeal, and it would have appeal to environmental justice groups, to civil rights groups, to other groups that are focusing on chemical toxic pollution, land use. I mean, it just feeds into so many different areas, and it's such a great, it provides a real opportunity for networking building. So I would just sort of urge thinking of how we might start to assemble that in a more comprehensive way, even though we all work 24/7 on this stuff in other areas. And just sort of an ancillary point to that is, even though, you know, the media and briefing papers, the amicus idea, I think is phenomenal, because amicus briefs can be done just as a way to get information accessible to the public. So I'm very intrigued by that idea. Okay, the other main thing that I wanted to talk about a little bit is the technical. I've been diving into sort of the general literature on landfills and toxins over the last week or so, and I'm struck by a couple of things. One, the possibility of explosions that exist in landfills. I mean, it strikes me that you effectively could be making a quasi-dirty bomb, in a not an necessarily intentionally activated one. But anytime you have an explosion and there's nuclear, particulates around, that's a dirty bomb of some form. The second aspect of it, a technical aspect, as far as I can tell, because it's never existed before, nobody's really looked at the chemical the possibility of chemical interactions from the existing chemical mess that's in landfills and so forth, and nuclear waste debris. I mean, I would imagine, I'm not a chemist, but I'm imagining there's some really funky possibilities there. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Thank you. We've got about 6 or 7 more callers, and we've got about 20 minutes. So I think we're doing okay. Did anybody want to give a brief response to the things that Michelle just said?
Yeah, it's Dan here. On the technical side, you make some very, very good points. It's not simply the question of explosions, which can occur. You have methane building up in landfills, for example, but the potential for fire. And we have had that, for example, in the Westlake landfill in St. Louis area, that received illegally all sorts of Manhattan Project radioactive waste dumped in a regular landfill, and the organic material in the regular part of the landfill has been burning for years. Similarly, there was a fire at the Hunters Point landfill, which has radioactive and chemical materials in it. Secondly, the interaction between the chemicals and the radioactive materials is very important. One of the reasons you don't want to put radioactive materials in a place other than that are receiving radioactive materials is that interaction. Many of the chemicals that can be found in a hazardous waste landfill or a regular municipal landfill have the effect of what we call chelating compounds. They increase the migration rate of the radioactive materials. And so adding chemicals and radioactivity together can increase the danger from both in a synergistic way and cause them to migrate very, very quickly.
Radionuclides on roller skates, we've said.
All right, Diane.
This is Yvette. I'm Yvette Arellano with Texas Environmental Justice Advocacy Services based in Houston, Texas. We live at the mouth of a major port, and obviously it was the largest petrochemical complex in the nation. My concern is over current drainage projects that are creating islands similar to those off of the coast of California. Would these be vulnerable sites for this kind of radioactive waste? And then the second part to that is that being in Texas and dealing with fracking as well as processing, are the frack injection sites also open to this kind of waste?
Wow.
Well, you know what, Yvette, it's Jane. It's so great to hear your voice. Yes, you know, as you know, fracking fluids, which are have all kinds of radioactive materials in them, are being deep well injected in West Texas. And if there was a way that you could take a decommissioned reactor and get it in a fluid form, I'm sure that they would deep well inject it in West Texas. So there's a whole classification of nuclear waste that's already being deep well injected. And I don't see anything, because NRC is essentially letting go of its regulatory authority over this huge swath of waste. I mean, it could end up literally anywhere.
The Federal Register notice says that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission staff intend, that's the word they use, intend for it to go to a landfill. But that's all it says, is their intent. Anyone else want to respond to Yvette's question? Okay. Then we'll go on to our next caller in the 708 area code.
Hi, it's Dan Boudar. I've got two questions. One is the hashtag VLLW briefing didn't work on my Twitter, and I don't know why. And I've been trying for several minutes. And then I'm wondering, did medical waste all in the past have to go to a licensed facility? It's very low level, and I don't know whether the waste from hospitals and so on has to go to a licensed facility. And I have one other. There was a fire out in Utah, I believe, in a ditch that had radioactive waste in it, and it was probably about 3 or 4 years ago, and I wonder if anybody can remember that and give me a clue so that I can look that up.
Any of the speakers want to take that?
Well, first of all, yes, medical waste does have to go to a regular low-level radioactive waste licensee dump right now. So that's a yes. And I was not aware that there was a fire in a trench in Utah. So
no, it was in Nevada.
That's what I thought.
Oh,
in Nevada.
I'm sorry, right. It was in Beatty, Nevada.
Yeah.
It was in Beatty. Yes, and there was a whole report that the state of Nevada did on it, which was not that great of a report. They didn't even start monitoring it until the plume had passed away from the site. It was material that got wet, that wasn't supposed to get wet, and it exploded, and there is some video of that. That was a closed, licensed radioactive waste facility, one of the six in the country. And I would like to say on medical waste, that medical waste is a very, very small fraction of commercial low-level radioactive waste. Most medical treatment and diagnosis does not even generate waste. X-ray machines don't make waste. If you get a dye or something like that, a radioactive dye, when you get an exam, there might be some waste from that. But generally, medical waste, there isn't any, or it's very short-lasting. And then there are a few strange isotopes that they try to make use of, and those need to be isolated longer. But generally, it's stored for decay, and it goes to the licensed sites. And I have not heard of any expectation of this stuff going. I mean, the real motivation here and the real concern, I would argue, is the reactors, the nuclear power industry. And medical is often a foot in the door to say, oh, we have to do it or your grandmother won't get her cancer treatment. Dan, did you want to, or Terry, say anything else on those?
Can you hear me? I got disconnected for a moment.
I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, so very quickly, medical waste, some of it is short-lived, and that doesn't have to go to a licensed facility. You can put it into a room and store it to decay. As Diane points out, the other medical wastes are a very, very small fraction of the waste stream, though I don't see any reason why this rule wouldn't, or deregulation rule wouldn't affect them, that they wouldn't start sending their stuff to municipal landfills also. In terms of the Nevada fire, there's some remarkable film footage that you may want to look for on the web of the fire and explosions. It was almost like a little geyser. My memory is that some rainfall hit the trenches had collapsed a bit, so water pooled. Water went then down into the buried waste. Some of the waste was sodium, radioactively contaminated. Sodium and water explode, and so it was kind of a mess. And just one more example why you don't want to have chemicals and radioactivity together, and this will dramatically increase that potential.
Thank you. Diane, could I just talk about the fact that there's a deadline on the 27th of July for emergency 20th. Preparedness. No, the 27th for emergency preparedness. For small
if
reactors.
You can wait till the end. Well, I'll bring that up at the end. I'll make a note Thanks. Here. I'm going to stay focused here. The deadline for this commenting is July 20th. And actually what Jan's saying is there's another comment deadline on the 27th because new reactors would not be required to have emergency planning zones. So that's another terrible fight that the NRC is forcing us to wage. Okay, the next person up is Maureen. Maureen Mulligan? Oh dear. Well, I'll leave her unmuted and move to Columbia. Yeah. Oops, I made her go away.
Yes.
Oh, well.
This is actually for Columbia. This is Joel Kupferman.
Okay.
You hear me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay, we're pushing the action. I want everyone to, you know, to ask you guys what we should be doing, but also I think it's important to point out of forming those alliances and the fact that you said that some of the sites caught on fire, I think it's important that we reach out to the local first responders as potential allies in fighting this. After 9/11, my law project became the environmental attorneys for the Firefighters Union, and we were instrumental in getting a lot of regulations and a lot of changes in policy because we had the firefighters with us. So I just want to, you know, ask you, what other local groups do you think we should reach out to besides public health people, union workers, and municipal attorneys?
Very quickly about the firefighters, an extraordinarily good point. One of the main, I mean, it's a very dangerous profession, period. But one of the dangers should not be that you're going to fight a fire and don't know that you're being exposed to radioactivity. So if you went to a landfill where some waste had caught fire and you thought that all that was there were banana peels and, you know, old newspapers, but in fact there was plutonium and strontium and cesium and you didn't know, so you fought it and inhaled that stuff, it would be a tremendous risk. So if one can alert the firefighters' unions, they, I think, would have a strong incentive to weigh in.
And I'll get back to everyone with connections on the national level, but it should be also done on the local level, and we could help coordinate that.
Great. Jay?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the first responders and the firefighters are really the frontline shock troops for, you know, a lot of chemical exposures, and adding these nuclear exposures to that is really unfair and completely unnecessary. So I think that's a great idea, Joel, is to reach into the first responders. And, of course, anybody who's in New York should be contacting Schumer, because Schumer is going to play a big role here in the political pushback on this rulemaking. And we can help do some messaging around that.
Thank you.
Terry, did you have anything on that?
Not as to Joel's question, I just want to point out that since the dawn of the commercial nuclear power age, medical isotopes, medical uses of the peaceful atom have been the camouflage for the industry's far deeper, far more evil indifference.
And the next person is Anonymous. whose phone I've just opened up. I have no other information.
Thank you. Yeah, this is Stephen Sondheim. I want to reinforce what Michelle was talking about. Has there been any effort to acquaint the public? Because the public outcry would be amazing. And Diane knows this. We, in Memphis, Tennessee, they were going to put low-level radioactive waste in landfills. And the county commissioners, the mayor, or none of the public knew about it. And when they found out about it, they were appalled. And we had a meeting. There were 250 people there. And it turns out they were cut off at the knees because of some state regulation. But the point is, when people find out that this is going to happen in their local landfills, they get outraged. And I hope we can somehow take advantage of that. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to try with this person who doesn't have a name, and then after that person, we'll have Juan Farah. I mean, you don't have a name on your phone, so whoever's waiting. Okay, Juan.
Hey, hi, this is Dave. This is Dave Kraft at NEIS. Hi.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I'm on Skype, and that's why there's this problem. I'm glad somebody brought up Westlake and the Beatty examples, but let's not forget also that Chelyabinsk was a interaction of chemicals with radioactive waste. What I really wanted to make a comment on, though, is how to push this and characterize this in a way that even politicians and reporters can understand. And I'd like to suggest that we pitch this and characterize this as taking as the NRC taking a playbook from the Donald Trump COVID response. Trump is his whole approach to it is if you don't do testing, there's not a problem, so you don't see it, so don't worry. And I think that's a strong parallel to what the NRC is doing here. They're not allowing for any kind of reporting, manifests, follow-up, inspections, monitoring over time. So the NRC is essentially doing to this waste what Trump is doing to COVID. And I'd like to suggest we utilize that theme in the press and in our meetings with the Congress people. That's it.
It's a good idea.
Diane, this is Terry. Dave, I love you and you're brilliant, but how do you know that Trump didn't get the idea from the NRC?
Point taken.
Okay, Juan Perez, who fought the waste control specialist site in Texas, and now it's there, and now we might even be on the same side with them on this. Juan, are you with us here? Hello, hello. Juan?
Can you hear me now?
I wanted to hear from you. Oh, yes, hello. Now I can. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I was trying like hell before you did. Tell me, is this too late?
No.
Hey, yeah.
You're just in time.
Okay. Well, anyway, this is Juan Farras with Texas in Houston. But I'm actually from Big Spring, Texas, which is about, you know, maybe 20, 25 miles from Andrews, Texas. And I remember going up there when they first started, because I also know the waste management, waste control people, the Brighams. And they own some country over here in the, close to Gonzales in Houston, in the close to San Antonio, Texas. But anyway, when they first started drilling, digging, okay, just imagine, I went down there with Rick Hines with Greenpeace, and I was with Greenpeace at that time. And we went just to see what was going on, you know, the beginning phase of it. And I'm telling you, those big old trucks, you know, heavy-duty trucks that they make, they look like maybe five or six stories. And huge, they look like little tanker trucks at the bottom of the pit when they were initially, you know, digging it up. But anyway, I'm just giving you of what I saw. And then we also helped Bill Eddington with Sierra Blanca when they wanted to build it over there. Anyway, they got built, And our biggest concern right now is because of all the fracking that is going on, it's also causing a lot of earthquakes. And so we're very seriously concerned that if this earthquakes continue to occur, some of that low-level nuclear radioactive waste is going to start leaking into the Ogallala Aquifer. And, you know, that supplies water to about 8 states in that area. And additionally, like I think you had mentioned, the methane levels in that area already exceed the methane levels here in Houston. So there's a lot of methane, there's a lot of fracking going on, a lot of earthquakes. From what I know also, a lot of those workers that are getting rid of the brine water, they're actually just going to the nearest, place, vacant area out there in the country and just dumping their water and then coming back for another load because they get paid by the truckload. And the worst thing also is, of course, transporting this waste, nuclear radioactive waste in 18-wheelers throughout that area. Lately, there's been a lot of 18-wheeler accidents, and I suspect we're going to see more. But I'm glad you're working on it, and we want to be involved in it because this is serious.
There's a drought.
And, of course, there's a serious drought right now. But we're very concerned because that area is it's populated, but not as densely populated as other areas. And it's kind of a hidden area. If you don't know where, you know, Andrews is, but it's close to Midland and Odessa and also to Hobbs, New Mexico. It's only about 8 miles from the New Mexico border.
So, Juan, I think that what the big threat for WCS or for that area right now is the high-level waste that is being targeted there. So that would be the focus. I mean, at this point, the site is licensed for radioactive waste, and it's one of the four places in the country where it's supposed to go. And it's not a great place for it. None of the four really are. But we're focusing here on not spreading it all over the place. And so I think we need to figure out a strategy on keeping the high-level waste out. And also, they also have a non-radioactive license, a RCRA license facility at WCS that they're dumping in also. So we've got this happening already at that site.
Oh, yeah, I understood that, but I was just sort of giving you a background of all the issues that we've had for numerous years, you know, almost 20 years now.
Uh-huh.
And our state regulators, TCEQ, is very lenient in actually making all this happen for those businesses.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
Now we've ended up with four people speaking, four people online to speak, but it's time for us to close out. Let's see. Could I have Yen very, very quickly?
Hi, I just wanted to comment on that I think posing this as a partisan issue is not very smart because I think that everyone would be concerned about having nuclear waste near them. Like even conservatives
right.
would be against that.
I agree completely.
That's
even
awesome.
Even pro-nuclear people don't want nuclear waste going into their garbage. So that's another, so thank you for that. Therese Kirchner? Tim, did you end it?
There was a glitch with the button.
Oh, I guess we are closing out.
But we did have the next person in the queue was actually Leona Morgan.
No, there was Therese Kirchner and another person, and then Leona Morgan.
Yeah, Therese Kirchner was one of the previous commenters, but we had some people
okay.
that we had at least a couple people who hadn't had a chance to ask a question yet.
But if we're at the end of the time right now. And so if you wanted, Leona wanted to announce her event on Thursday to the folks on the call, and I wanted to thank our speakers for taking the time this evening to share with us their information and thank them for all the hard work that they're doing on this really important issue. and to encourage everyone to get your comments in, get resolutions passed, get media attention, contact your officials, especially on the committees of jurisdiction, and be in touch. And our website should be updated by the mid-morning tomorrow or the afternoon tomorrow on this issue. It's not quite right yet.
Also, Diane?
Yes.
Diane, they also need to sign our comment letter if they wish.
Yes, we have a 10-page comment letter, which is available. And if people want to get access to that, you can be in touch with me. We've got a Google Doc that people can go to, and from there you can sign it. And did Dan or Jane want to say anything else in closing?
This is Jane. I just thank everyone who cares about this issue. I think it's going to be a rodeo, and I think it's going to take a lot of political activism to try to turn this issue around. So I look forward to working with everyone as we move forward. Thanks again for inviting me to attend.
And
Dan, I just would like to ask Diane if you would, in closing, slowly repeat the email address where people can send their comments and get other people to send their comments in. I think it would be helpful.
Okay. Let me pull that up.
So this is something very bad that can happen. But almost everybody on this call has been involved in fighting very bad things, and we've won most of those battles. And this one can be won also. So don't despair. As they say, organize.
So to comment against on the VLLW proposal, the email address is vlltransfercomments.resource@nrc.gov. So it's VLLW transfer, TRANSFER, comments, COMMENTS, dot resource, singular, RESOURCE, at nrc.gov. And we will also have that on our website for people. And feel free to contact any of us to help you, help us get this whole thing stopped. Thank you very much. And with that, we'll close out. Thank you.